It's Celtics coverage on CLNSRadio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward.
That's what I'm talking about.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
The Celtics are losers tonight, 109-99. They go into Cleveland, and after a game where they could have been celebrating an Eastern Conference title, here we go again. Just like 2012, just like the first round before this, just like so many other years, LeBron is going to get another chance in a Game 7, and that makes me nervous as hell. I hate to say it. I hate to pour a little cold water on this amazing run, and I know what I'm going to hear tonight. You know, it's gravy. It's a blessing that they're even here in the first place. So if they lose, they lose. Well, yeah, but a 2-0 lead in the series, a 3-2 lead in the series, both lost in overwhelming fashion in Cleveland. That doesn't make me feel so great. And I know there's a larger context at play here that we have to look at, but this is the Celtics postgame show, and this is where we get crazy and irrational. So I'm Bobby Manning. Matt Chin is with me. We're going to break down this loss and look forward to Game 7 with Nick Sesento behind the glass as well. I see callers all lined up on the board, so we're going to get to you in just a minute. But let's open this up and really look at where the game went wrong tonight, because the Celtics led by 5 after the opening quarter, and at halftime they're down 11. So the second quarter was the big disaster tonight. The offense was just in dire straits for so much of the game. I don't know what it is, but they just don't seem to have any ability to stay in control, disciplined, in their normal flow on offense when they're on the road. And then you see a break into their defense with the transition points, the threes on the run, the drives to the rim at full speed that Cleveland was able to get in this one, the way they were able to send guys at full speed to the boards and completely decimate the Celtics on the boards. I want to look at the rebounding numbers real quick, because that has determined every game so far, one of many factors, along with home court. And yes, once again, Cleveland out-rebounds the Celtics 44-31, and that was actually a big role in this game. Yeah, I usually think rebounding is pretty incidental to how a game goes. There's so many other related factors that play into it. But when you look at the fourth quarter, when the Celtics began within 7-8 points, really starting to make their push, playing flawless offense, I thought, they finally got everything under control in that fourth quarter. Larry Nance, almost 3 plays in a row, I think it was 3 plays in 5 possessions, just completely bails the Cavaliers out of bad misses by running to the rim uncontested on putbacks. LeBron put one over in similar fashion through Rozier a couple plays later. And I know the 2 big plays that they're showing on SportsCenter right now, the daggers that he hit over Tatum, 1-2 punch, 6 points on top of the 40-point game he already had to finish the Celtics in this one. But those offensive rebounds just seem to be so deflating for the Celtics down the stretch in this one. And who was on the court but Greg Monroe for 5 minutes of that fourth quarter? Interesting choice by Stevens there. He goes a +8, but I didn't really see what he did besides being around a good flow of offense around him during that stretch. So interesting result to this one. I don't think all too unexpected with the Celtics falling to 1-7 on the road, but disappointing nonetheless. LeBron drops 46-11-9. Isn't that something? Hurt his leg at one point, got the cameras on him a little bit. I'm sure people are going to be talking about that tonight as well. Got right up and got right back in the flow of things. But I'm talking too much. Let's get our co-host in here, Matt Chin. Are you as down as I am, Matt? I'd imagine not.
Oh, Bobby, well, they're playing with fire here in this 7th game. You never want to let LeBron, be able to control 48 minutes like that. Before I get into why exactly the Celtics lost, I want to touch on that last thing that you talked about. Channel my inner Bostonian, my inner green teamer for just 1 second and try to be a little bit less objective. LeBron James, let's go back 2 days ago when his hands are on his knees. He's fatigued. He's exhausted. And it's the end of the first quarter in Boston in game five. And the entire narrative for the last 2 days are, oh, he's exhausted. He has too much on his plate. Oh, I feel we should all feel so bad for him. Tonight, the guy comes out, plays 46 minutes, doesn't look fatigued at all. What happened to all of that? And then in the middle of it, to add more theatrics to it, he gets hurt when Larry Nance falls back into him. But then he's limping around, and he takes little baby steps here and there. So the cameras are on him. And then what does he do the next couple possessions? On offense, he takes everyone into the post and just bodies them up. And then on defense, he's limping around. He's stretching the leg a little bit. Like, and then he's icing it at the timeout. And then he comes in and hits a bunch of daggers. Like, guy, we know you're not hurt, okay? Like, why are you playing it up to the cameras like that? Like, I get it. It's one thing to have 46, 11, and 9, and, you know, lead the team plus 15. But, like, why does it have to be like that? I think as a Bostonian, that's what makes me so upset about LeBron James. Like, stuff like that. Like, why do you have to play it up like that? Okay, sorry.
Oh,
that was
he's
my
so
first
good
thing.
At it, too. He had
I
me.
Know.
He had
and he
me.
Knows.
He goes down
he
right there, and I'm like, all right, is he banged up a little bit? Is this going to be a break for the Celtics? And then all of a sudden, just like even know, a superhero or something. It just magically heals, and 2 minutes later, he's going all over them in the post again.
And we've seen this for 15 years where LeBron looks like anyone else who suffers that injury is, like, debilitated for the rest of the game. And then he comes back and just throws down a huge dunk. We've seen it, you know, his entire career. It's incredible. But this Celtics loss tonight, you know, really disappointing, obviously, because the Celtics fought and they hung in it. You know, I thought really the key was for them to get to a good start and really not come down by double digits after the first quarter, like what happened in games 3 and 4. And they really accomplished that. It was the second quarter that really killed them. And every single, you know, the Celtics have won 6 of the last 8 quarters in Cleveland, outplaying the Cavs. I mean, I guess the fourth quarter tonight was 26-26. But for all intents and purposes, I think they've outplayed them for large stretches, but these huge droughts that they go in offensively, I think, is where they're really missing someone like Kyrie Irving and what Jason Tatum will eventually turn into. And
you
that's
know,
what
that wasn't it for me tonight, though. I thought in the fourth they started to look sensational offensively, and a big part of that was Terry.
Well, they changed up their game plan.
Yeah,
I thought the second quarter they went too much into the post. They were trying to get isolations for Brown in the post against guys like Korver. And then the other four guys were just standing around. They got rid of their motion offense, which is just – it's not them. And that's why they went through a huge dry spell. And then the third and fourth quarter, they really found their offensive groove again. But it took them too long to adjust out of that in the second quarter, taking too many early shots, not making the Cavs defend. I mean, that was the frustrating stretch for me.
It's tough because they had built so much in that first quarter. Quality shooting, excellent rim protection. Baines was giving LeBron fits in that first quarter at the rim when he was rotating inside. And it looked like they had finally had the makings of turning this whole road thing around. And like you said, despite some of the positive things, the one quarter, the victorious quarters that they've had on the road, these little indications that they're starting to turn it around, they just, whether it's the missed free throws or the turnovers or a complete disregard for rebounding down the stretch of this game, which just drove me crazy. Because you want to point out the offense, fine. You know, they had stretches throughout this game, but they shoot 51% in this game. You can't ask for much more than that on the road from this offense, the way everyone is shot on the road. Almost everybody turned around their road woes in this game besides Al Horford. Brown at 11 of 18. Rozier, 10 of 16.
And Tatum came on late.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, Smart was more in control, I thought, than he has been in last past road games. So this was easily their best road performance of the series.
Oh, for sure.
But they still left so much on the table in the fourth and the third. And that's why, you know, you point out those numbers, the tied fourth, the victorious third quarter. It just watching it, it didn't feel like they were winning. It didn't feel like they were picking up ground. The whole time I'm just like, this is terrible.
well, they're chipping away and chipping away. And as much as you want to give credit to LeBron James, he really didn't find his – he found his aggressiveness, I thought, in spurts tonight. It wasn't like a consistent barrage where they were looking for him every single time, which, honestly, I wouldn't have been surprised if they did that after Kevin Love went out. But you think in the third
that
and fourth
was interesting.
Quarter,
yeah.
You think in the third and fourth quarter that you could just get one stop on George Hill in isolation. You can get one offensive rebound back from Larry Nance and a putback, something like that. Like, those are guys that earlier in the series have been a zero, even a negative asset for the Cavs. But tonight, their impact, and Jeff Green, more so in the second and third quarter, but, you know, he was making shots from the field. I think, you know, those three guys really filled in well for Kevin Love. And the Celtics, you know, at times in this series, they've been able to lock those guys down. But tonight, they played with a completely different level of confidence. And it was just as disappointing that you couldn't connect a little bit more on those plays. You mentioned the free throws. If you had a couple of those back, I think you would have been closer in the last 5 minutes as well. I think there's small factors outside of just LeBron James being LeBron James that could have won you this game.
There's so many little things that went against the Celtics in this one. You saw it throughout the four quarters, whether they're playing great or not. They had little slip-ups on the defensive end, awful turnovers. Again, I still cannot believe how loose they are with the ball on the road. 13 in this one. They cleaned it up late. I think they only had one in the fourth quarter. But there was a point where Smart, again and again, was just throwing it over the back line, trying to hit guys in the post. And, you know, I guess those are better than the live ball turnovers because – Cleveland's not sprinting the other way at full speed by everyone, which I think was a big difference in this game early on, too, is you had a lot of those live ball turnovers going the other direction that Boston was able to keep up with. But it's just part of this larger trend of the road woes in the postseason that might end up doing Boston in before they can get to the NBA Finals. But there is a Game 7. I'm not going to take away from the Celtics and the way they've dominated at home court this postseason. 10-0, best start to a postseason at home since the 97 Jazz, I think I saw on ESPN. So they're playing with that house money in Boston, Game 7. We'll see if Kevin Love plays. Concussion protocol has been enacted for him. 5 minutes into the game, he bumped heads with Tatum or bumped into Tatum's shoulder. It's kind of funny that that happened after what LeBron went through earlier in the series. But here's an interesting thing I want to hit on, and callers, we're about to get to you in just 1 second, 347-215-7771. Why did it seem, maybe it's just coincidental, but why did it seem like the Cavaliers really woke up, started getting into their offense, started playing better when Love exited this game? Coincidence or not?
It did feel like that. I mean, obviously, Love exiting was pretty early on in the game overall. I mean, I think he only had, 5 minutes in. But you know, at that point, the Celtics had built what probably near their biggest lead of the game in the first quarter there. And after that, they did seem to play a little bit better. LeBron was a lot more passive in the first quarter. I mean, he missed a couple short layups. You touched on Baines being able to defend near at the rim. But he wasn't nearly as assertive in the first quarter. I thought he tried to get, per usual, some of his other guys more engaged early to see, okay, is this a J.R. Smith game? Is this going to be a Kyle Korver game? Is it a Jeff Green game? And then they just leaned on Jeff Green once they saw that he was hot, and then it became George Hill in the second quarter. And, you know, the Celtics weren't really able to pressure the Cavs as much as they have, especially at home. And just their rotational defense just does not move as fluidly on the road. I don't know if it's a communication issue. I don't think it's a crowd issue because, frankly, Philadelphia's crowd is 5 times louder than Cleveland's could ever dream of being. So I just don't get why they don't make crisp rotations as well on the road. Because
that's
really,
what bugs
that's been their
me,
bread and butter.
Out of this one, because you know, I don't even want to talk about the offense tonight. It had stretches. The turnovers hurt them, but they cleaned up the game in the fourth quarter about as well as they could have. And you miss 9 free throws in a 10-point game. Usually you can add up the free throws after the game and it'll take you over the deficit you held and you win. That's not even the case in this one. You still would have lost by 1 if you hit every single free throw. So I look at 2 things. The defensive rotations, as you just said, the rebounding, which was horrendous. You lose that by 13, and you're a pretty good rebounding team. Those 2 factors really did the Celtics in this one. And LeBron being LeBron down the stretch just seemed to put the icing on the cake. So I'm frustrated about that. Yeah, everyone's going to talk about it's gravy, it's great, Game 7, undefeated, Love's maybe out. You don't want to hang your hat on
that's
too
very
many
pie
things.
In the sky. I mean, you're dodging bullets here with LeBron James, the greatest player of this generation, maybe when it's all said and done, the greatest player ever.
I was so scared about a Game 7 from the start in this one.
Yeah.
I picked Cavaliers in 7 before the series, and I said this on the Slack. I don't know if you caught this. Doesn't this feel like 2012 again?
It does. It really does. And the frustrating thing about tonight is LeBron James could have had his finale, unbelievable game, 46 points, 11 boards, 9 assists, efficient field goal shooting. And if you just lock down everyone else, you're going to the NBA Finals. You're sitting at home tomorrow night watching Houston and Golden State battle it out.
Oh, yeah.
If you can just do a little bit better on Jeff Green and Larry Nance and George Hill. And the sad thing is, you know that the Celtics have it in them to do that. And, you know, this is one that I think if the Celtics lose Game 7, we'll look back on and be like, this is one that they could have really had.
So let's get to the callers. 347-215-7771 is the Mac Weldon call lines. Nick Sesento's keeping you posted on the board. That's our recap of tonight's game. We're going to talk about Game 7, looking forward at that one, how hopeful you are going up against LeBron, who hasn't lost a Game 7 in 10 years. I do look at that factor and say this still is the least competent supporting cast LeBron has had over that 10-year stretch. It's not his worst ever. I'm still adamant about that. But the way his supporting cast hasn't shown up in Boston could still be a point of optimism for Celtics fans going into that one. LeBron could score 40 to 50 points, and if those guys all have another stinker, then it probably won't matter for Cleveland. Though it just feels 50-50 at this point, which is not where you want to be when you had a 2-0 lead and 3-2 lead in the series. Sesento, welcome, my friend. It's been a hell of a series. Did we miss anything there you want to hit on?
Yeah, Al Horford. What happened to him? This is the type of game that you need Al Horford to come in. I mean, I know they were throwing double teams at him early, but he's a good enough passer and needs to recognize those double teams a lot earlier when they throw the man at him. There's going to be somebody open if they're double teaming him down on the block. Where was Al Horford tonight? I just didn't see him, man. Yeah. I think this is the game when you need your 31-year-old to lead the squad in a closeout game, and he just wasn't there. The rebounds, the missed free throws, those are things you can't do on the road, especially when you're facing LeBron James, and you have, you know, the quote-unquote best player of a generation or whatever you want to say, LeBron James playing against you. The best player in the league right now is what I'll give him. I mean, you guys can fawn over him all you want, but the best player in the league right now, you know, you can't give up those things. But Al Horford, Boston Celtics really needed him. There were moments when Al Horford could have done a lot better in this game, and he just didn't do it.
Here's my thing about Horford. You know, I'm not letting him off the hook at all because he was pretty putrid in this game when they really needed him to give them something, especially on the defensive end now in this one. But there's two points I want to hit on. Him and Baines have been a deadly duo all year when they've been in lineups together. The net ratings are awesome on it, and I've talked about this so much this series. They finally turned it around in Game 5 by playing Baines 30 minutes, and it worked wonders. And I thought Baines had a solid first quarter in this one. He ended up minus 14 on the night, didn't play in the second half. But he played such a big role in the Game 5 win. I don't know how they went away from him, didn't even give him another chance in this one. I always think Horford looks better with a center on the court next to him. And then when it comes to the offensive end, where Horford's probably going to get the most flack for his game tonight, when he's looking like that, if you're Stevens, throw a few sets his way. Have him bring up the ball up the court. I know Terry Rozier was doing great on the ball in this one. You probably don't want to take him out of the swing of that, but if you're worried about his offense, give him a few more sets. That's something I look to, because in these games, I feel like the biggest issue that he has is that the Celtics can't get the ball to him. I'm not going to make too many excuses for him because he was not great in this game, but those are a few factors that I think went against him.
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys, and it's something that we didn't hit on earlier on in the show. Horford has to be the leader on the road in one of these games, and he has to be the veteran whose eyes don't get too big under the spotlight. There's an excuse for everyone else on this team, but not him. And tonight, I understand what people will say about, oh, they were throwing double teams at him, but we've seen Horford more decisive off the catch, where he goes into that quick spin, he goes quickly, jumps away from the double team, and either goes to the fadeaway jumper or goes to the jump hook if he's going left. And tonight, his recognition of where the double team was coming from, it just wasn't good. I mean, on the at home, 90% of the time, he kills you when you throw that double team at him. He knows exactly where the open guy is along the perimeter, and he throws a bullet across the court. I mean, it would be one thing if he only had 6 points, but he had, you know, 10 plus assists or something, but only 4 assists tonight. His impact on the offensive end was really missed. And the other thing is, last series against Embiid, Horford did an amazing job of bringing the opposing big guys away from the basket, making Embiid guard him along the perimeter. I know Larry Nance and Tristan Thompson are a little bit more quick-footed, but it's surprising me that both of those guys are still having the impact defensively at and around the rim with Horford present on the court. I think there needs to be, some sort of equilibrium where he's going back beyond the three-point arc to bring those guys away from the basket, which will just open up more driving lanes to not get swallowed up so much like they did tonight.
Here's the thing, though. Yeah. They definitely needed Horford to step it up a little bit. We're talking about a lot of offensive things when it comes to him, but through 5 or 6 games now, the Celtics have pretty much scored 100 points in every single game, win or lose. The issues tonight were all defensive, and it was that way in all 3 road games. It was more evident than ever tonight when you throw in the defensive rebounding issues that they had. That just seemed to compound the troubles that they had on that end. And that puzzles me, because you can understand guys having worse shooting nights on the road, their shooting splits going down, the offense going down as a whole on the road. It really didn't in the series. And tonight you shoot 51%, which I think is the best you could have asked for out of this game. If we go into this game saying the Celtics shoot 51%, we probably think they win. But they just didn't have it on defense. And why is that, Matt?
Well, I just don't think that they play as connected on the road for whatever reason it is. And if you want to put this on Stevens, if you want to put it on Horford, I think those are the two guys that really manage the defense the most out there. And I think those are the guys who, either from the sideline or from the back line, are the quarterbacks of the defense, so to say. There's not a lot you can do with LeBron when he's, on the left side with the clock winding down and he goes to that step back jumper moving to his left along the left wing. Like, that's automatic for him. And we've seen it time and time again. That's his spot, and he likes to move to his left, stuff like that. I mean, some of the tough impossible shots, but, really cleaning up the glass is somewhere where you can start. I think the good news is going into game 7, you know that you're going to get more of the 50-50 balls. You're going to get at least a handful of points just off the crowd energy. And if you can clean up the small areas that you've been able to accomplish earlier in the series, then let LeBron James go bananas. And if Kevin Love's not there, then all the merrier. Because I just don't think that the supporting cast without Kevin Love can beat you again.
I was just going to get to that. Yeah, because it didn't play a role tonight. For some weird reason or another, I think the game seemed to turn in the Cavaliers' favor, actually, when he went out. Probably due to the fact that Jeff Green and Larry Nance were fantastic for the Cavaliers tonight. And George Hill had his best game of the series, getting to the rim, getting aggressive on the ball. Those things all helped the Cavaliers out. And I think other guys stepping up on the ball in the scoring department really helped James get going too, because a lot of LeBron's offense came off the catch tonight, which is an underrated thing in his game. If you're able to get him off the ball in motion, moving, shooting off the three-point line, off the catch, those things help him out too. And
you're getting Sixers fans excited.
Yeah. Or Houston, for that matter.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that something now? We all thought Golden State, Cleveland was over to the capacity where neither of them might be in the NBA Finals, both down 3-2. And here we go. LeBron's got a game 7. Chris Paul's down in Houston. We know the Warriors are keen point favorites tomorrow. And I think we all know where that game's headed. It's going to be a massacre. So 2 big game 7s, I would imagine. And at the end of it all, we might end up with Cavaliers-Warriors again at the end of it. And I seem to think that that's not what the league wants. But people hate the Celtics and us. People hate James Harden enough, and I don't think the national fans even going to care all that much, which is interesting in itself. So I think I've held these callers long enough. Sacento, I'll ask you real quick. Do you think Kevin Love plays in Game 7? And if he doesn't, how are you feeling about the Celtics in that one?
Well, I tend to agree with you that I think that Kevin Love is exactly what the Boston Celtics want. I know he hits a few shots. I know he's their second leading scorer. But I think that Al Horford does a whole lot better when Kevin Love is on the floor. I think the reason you saw Aaron Baines come off is because Kevin Love went out and the Cavaliers pretty much went small with, not that Nance is a small guy, but he's more athletic. He's younger, he's more athletic. He's not as wide a body.
That's a great
not,
point.
So I think that's basically exactly what happened. Brad Stevens wasn't prepared for that adjustment. And, if Kevin Love is in the game, I think you go back to the Aaron Baines, Al Horford lineup. If he's not, and if the Cavaliers go small again, is Brad Stevens going to adjust and say, you know what, we got beat on the board so bad, we're going to go with Baines anyway and outsize him? Or is Brad Stevens going to try to adjust again? And, I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily a plus or a minus with Kevin Love on the floor in the Game 7.
I'm very intrigued to see how that goes in Game 7 if he doesn't play, because I think Matt brings up a good point, too, where they're getting so little production from their role guys on the road that they might desperately need that 15 to 20 that Love gives them.
Jeff Green's not doing 14 again.
So that's a double-edged sword right there. They really opened up the floor, got moving well. The offense just flowed so nicely when they went into that small ball lineup. And I think you bring up a great point there, Nick, in that probably is a big reason the Celtics probably couldn't play Baines down the stretch of this game, is the success of that lineup. So maybe that's something that helps the Celtics, hurts the Celtics. But again, the fact that you're even playing this game and that's even a question is frustrating coming out of this one. The one that the Celtics could have been talking about NBA Finals tonight. We could have been laying back here celebrating the end of LeBron in Cleveland, talking about who you'd rather have, Golden State or Houston. It's all in doubt now. So let's get to the callers and see what they think. 347-215-7771 is the Mack Weldon call line. I've been telling you about Mack Weldon throughout the series, and it's a big reason everybody's looking good in this studio. It's good to have Matt Chin back here on Celtics Blog, my running partner over there. We haven't heard from you in a while, Matt. Good to talk to you tonight. Nick Sacento's here, but all three of us are looking sharp tonight because of Mack Weldon. And it's not just that Mack Weldon has the best clothes, which is a big, big part of it, but they had a eureka moment in the department store aisle full of brands that dominated their top drawer, surrounded by a mind-numbing assortment of underwear and socks. They realized consistent fit and quality became a game of roulette. So they took the guessing, the searching for sales associates, all of the annoyance of them all out of the equation. And because of Mack Weldon, you're looking better than whatever you're possibly wearing right now if you try to check them out. They have premium men's essentials with smart design, premium fabrics. But the best thing about Mack Weldon, as I've been saying, is that you can go to their store, MackWeldon.com, and check out anything you want to find. It's so organized. You're not running around the store wasting your whole day trying to shop for clothes. It's very easy, organized, and simple process. So we're going to make it worth your while here on the Celtics postgame show. MackWeldon.com for 20% off your first order. Enter the promo code CLNS at checkout. That's MackWeldon.com. Let's get to the call lines. Our good friend Isaiah in New Jersey is here with us. Hello, Isaiah. Hello?
Uh-oh. Put Isaiah on hold. Don't let him go.
We'll check back with him in a minute.
Yeah.
We've been speaking to him throughout this series. It hasn't through good times and bad. It's amazing that this series has gone the home road thing. And that happened in the first round too, Does that seem to be more of an NBA thing or just a Celtics thing this season, the way that's gone with the home court?
I do think it's an NBA thing overall. For whatever reason it is.
Is that new?
I mean, it seems to – I mean, people have always really valued home court advantage. I think that's why teams fight for it so hard. But it has been exacerbated more so. Like, I feel like it's been more of a popular narrative this year, whether it's like the whole role players play better at home and they play worse on the road thing that people are really trying to drive this postseason. But I don't know. I can't really get a tangible reason why.
It's frustrating. It is. You'd like to see a road team gut it out, change that capacity. It's tough to talk about, too, besides, like, all those cliches, the role players, the crowd, everything else. But you chalk it up and you start seeing the results and you see how overwhelming these wins have been on both sides in this. And you're like, do those things actually matter? And the worst of the worst is the crowd. Like, if the crowd starts to impact this series, I think you're really worried on both sides about the result of some of these players, because that should be the last thing that's breaking into this
series. Especially for the Cavs. Like, they just have a slew of veteran guys. I mean, like, I know Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance, this is all really new to them. But, I mean, you got LeBron at the helm. Like, do you really need a more calming force than that?
Yeah.
I bet the Garden crowd, other players talk about it. I mean, J.J. Redick this week on the Bill Simmons' podcast was talking about how every single player on the Sixers said it was the loudest they've ever heard a stadium, loudest they've ever played. J.J. Redick says louder than anything he ever had at Duke, which, you know, those stadiums with Duke and Carolina, like, they can encapsulate a lot of sound. So maybe it does play a factor.
He said it was louder than Duke, huh? Because that Duke Stadium is one of the loudest I've seen across sports.
Simmons was trying to get him to say it, and he in so much said it.
All right.
He in so much, like, he didn't questions. Exactly, like, I don't think he wanted to, like, hate on Duke or anything like that, but, yeah.
I wish I listened to that, because we were talking about that the other day. Some people do ask those questions to get a certain answer. The way you ask it, it almost makes it impossible to say anything else. Like, what do you think this? It must surely be this. So what do you think?
I looked up here. I think Kevin Love's going to end up playing. The concussion protocol is heavily controlled by the team doctor. I'm looking at the protocol here. So, I mean, like, you know, can you pull a couple strings and say, like, oh, yeah, he's passed all of his tests. And you pass it on to Director of NBA Concussion Programming, Dr. Jeffrey Kutcher. And then he signs off on it. I feel like if you want Kevin Love out there for Game 7, as long as he's not, like, you know, totally, you know, suffered a really bad concussion, I feel like there's a way that they're going to get him out there. Although, what a convenient narrative for LeBron. If they lose, oh, it's because Kevin Love wasn't around. They had even less help than before. And if they win, oh, they won in spite of not having Kevin Love. LeBron's a hero. Blah, 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 blah. I'm going to hear I'm already telling you, that's what ESPN's going to talk about for a week.
Did you hear what Mark Jackson said during the broadcast? This might be a bigger accomplishment, getting this team to the finals than winning a championship.
Yeah, right. Well, first of all, a team that's cash-strapped because LeBron insisted on them re-signing JR and Tristan Thompson. Like, it's not like they have all this flexibility or anything like that. And the other thing is, like, let's look at who they've played. Indiana, who's really in its first season of, we thought they were going to be rebuilding. No one thought Oladipo would be what he would be. And there are a couple small plays away from beating the Cavs. Then they play against Toronto, who is so mentally unprepared to play against anything that says Cavaliers on the front of the jersey that Ty Lue could have you and I spotting up from behind the arc and we would have beat that team. And then they play a dismantled Celtics team for all intents and purposes. And, you know, they have to go to a game 7, and that's the biggest accomplishment, like, bigger than winning a finals, bigger than coming back 3-1. Like, I don't buy that for a second.
You see, that's so funny you say me and you could do. I think that's one of the funniest things we talk about in sports talk is when we go, you and I could do that. Or, you know,
well,
who
I genuinely believe
it
fits the Raptors.
But that just pops into my head something I saw on Twitter today, and it was Joel Embiid at a park in Philadelphia, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And people were talking trash to him. So he goes over this outdoor court, starts firing up this middle-aged man, it looked like. He was probably in his 30s or 40s with a backwards hat, who I guess was chirping Embiid. And Embiid faces him up, does a few dribbles between the leg, takes him all the way inside, and dunks all over him. That was so funny earlier. If you didn't catch that, you got to watch that today. Embiid is, as much chirping as he's doing the Celtics toward the Celtics right now, that was just good stuff, and I think you can appreciate Embiid if you're a Celtics fan until we meet again.
I do love Embiid. He's doing a really good job of soaking it all in now, because I think he realizes that there's always like a timetable for like, oh, this is the young, cool, up-and-coming NBA star. And then after that, that wears off at some point. So I think he's soaking it in now before he becomes the next Steph Curry and gets more hate from the media and stuff like that.
Yeah, that'll be, if he ever has to tone it down, that's going to be tough, because I think he is so great for the league right now. There's no other sport where you have a guy talking that openly and honest and candid, and you know, internet geared talk too. Like, this is just perfect for the kind of like Twitter NBA consumption that we view the league through. So I would be devastated if he ever changes his ways and stops playing people one on one in the street.
Hey, it's only if the media forces it to. It's never going to be the NBA. They don't silence their players or his agent or something like that. Yeah. All right, let's get back on point.
So let's talk about Game 7.
Yeah.
I, again, in the opener said, I think you're hanging your hat on those role players not playing as well in Boston and all those other factors, maybe Love not playing. But I do want to think about what the Celtics are going to have to do in this game themselves to take it, because I don't like the idea of hanging your hat on all those outside factors and just hoping it goes well, because we know LeBron's coming full speed. We were talking about how he had his hands on his legs in Game 5. I guarantee we don't see any of that in Game 7. We talked about the theatrics today. I think tonight showed more than anything that LeBron's throwing the Celtics for a loop, to use Ty Lue's
word. Not just the Celtics. He's throwing the whole world for a loop with that act.
And there's going to be no pain, no fatigue in Game 7. He's going to be playing 46 to 48 minutes, and the Celtics are going to have to do things really well. So what do you emphasize more than anything for Boston
in
Game 7?
It's exactly what Brad Stevens says about LeBron. You just need to make it hard on him. You can't let things come easily. So what the Celtics did a lot better in Game 5 with LeBron to help him get, I guess, more fatigue than tonight, was they made him work on defense. They made him shift side to side. You know, he would try to hide on a shooter in the corner. They would switch off of him and make that shooter either run the baseline or come off a screen or something like that. And that, after a while, it wears wears LeBron James down, but also the other Cavaliers. I thought tonight, especially in the second quarter, they were just didn't make them work. And I know you don't want to talk about the offense, but I just don't think that they made the Cavaliers work enough. And that's what led to the Cavaliers' offensive spurt, is they had solid energy the whole night, because I just don't think that they had to work too hard for their shots. And I don't think they had to work too hard for on defense. Game 7, I mean, yeah, you hang your hat on the fact that you have home cooking. I mean, how big of a sample size do you really need to know that the Celtics are going to play well? It's just, you know, how well the Cavs role players play. And that seems really simplistic to just oversimplify something like that and say it really comes down to it, but it does. Like, can you guard the perimeter? Can you make J.R. Smith become not a spot-up shooter, Kyle Korver, not a spot-up shooter? Run, close out hard to them and make them put it on the ground and either drive to the basket or give it up or shoot off the dribble, because those guys become so much less powerful and so much less of a threat if you can make them put the ball on the ground. Like, small things like that. Keeping Tristan Thompson and Larry Nance off the offensive glass. You know, I know the Celtics got caught up a lot in their man-to-man defense. They got caught up in their zone one time, and that led to offensive boards. Like, cleaning that stuff up, you'll be fine. But, you know, you're playing with fire, because the Cavs are a veteran up-and-down team. They're used to it. They're used to this kind of drama. They could come out at any time and put it behind them and play better.
I can't wait to see what they're throwing out there for Game 7 lineup-wise. And that's actually going to keep the Celtics guessing a little bit now. Normally you look at a player like Kevin Love going down and you say, shoot, that's going to kill the Cavs. I really think it could go either way right now, because Sacento hit the nail on the head there. They made the Celtics go small. And something that we're seeing again and again in this series, this season for the Celtics, it's going to change next year if we want to do that. But small ball hasn't worked well for them this year. And I don't know if it's a Marcus Morris thing, the fact that they really don't have that true post-present small ball four the way Jay Crowder was last year. Because, you know, I've been sort of comparing Crowder and Morris all season. Morris probably got the upper hand on Crowder this year as a whole, but definitively Crowder's a better rebounder and a better post defender. And those two things work against Morris in those smaller lineups, I think. And we saw that again tonight when the both teams went small. Cleveland seemed to have the edge in that capacity. Larry Nance stepped up at center. Jeff Green somehow, some way, had a big game. I guess he has one every once in a while. But that small ball thing concerns me going into Game 7. Say Love doesn't play. All of a sudden, you're taking Aaron Baines out of the equation for the Celtics, and I think he's been a big part of their success in this series. And there aren't too many combinations Boston can go to in small ball, whereas the Cavs have a ton of wings and such that they can throw out there. Now, does that bring Semi Ojeleye back into the equation? I'm not sure where the Boston goes from there if Cleveland's going small all Game 7.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Celtics can actually match the small ball. They don't necessarily need to, you know, go small ball themselves and move Horford to the five. Like, if you have Jeff Green at power forward, I have no problem with Al Horford defending Jeff Green. I'll take that matchup any day, especially with Jeff Green really trying to isolate the last couple games on the low block and power guys up toward the rim. Like, he's not doing that against Al Horford. And it's not like Aaron Baines was ever really matching up with Kevin Love anyway. So if Love doesn't play, that doesn't necessarily mean, like, you turn into Ty Lue and say, oh, well, Semi Ojeleye's not playing, I guess I can't play Kyle Korver. And like, oh, Kevin Love's not playing, I guess I can't play Aaron Baines now. Like,
you should have heard me on the air the other day when I heard he said that. That was vintage Ty Lue.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think the Celtics can just – they can match the small ball. And whether you do go back to Semi, whether you play a little bit – maybe – I mean, Yabusele only had 1 minute tonight. I would have rather had Yabusele in there than Monroe. I mean, I know Monroe is a +8, but like you said, I don't think he did much of anything. Or maybe you just go back to really seven players and that's it. And – rolled the same dice that you rolled in Game 5 and just go with those guys and see if they can hold up.
All right, so small ball, check that off. That matchup probably works out in Boston's favor. They can probably figure that out. What do you think the approach is against LeBron with that storm flying into Boston as we've seen before?
I mean, it's the same thing. I think you got to be able to close off. Here's the thing. When you have better rotational defense, sound rotational defense, where you have every guy who's not guarding LeBron off ball is able to guard multiple areas at one time, that's when the Celtics are the most potent defensively, because you have Al Horford and Marcus Morris who can, you know, flash into passing lanes, flash into LeBron's eyesight to try to bait him into throwing a pass cross court where they can easily rebound back and close it, make a hard closeout. Like, stuff like that where you just need to be sound defensively. I'm fine with LeBron getting 35, 40, as long as you make it hard on him and you make everyone else make tough shots. Everything else has to be contested. LeBron will get what he wants, but everything else on the rest of the Cavaliers players has to be contested the same way you did in games 1 and 2, where you really locked them down defensively. I mean, game 5 as well, but you know, the number of contested shots early in this series is where you need to be defensively, and just let LeBron be LeBron, but obviously put as many barriers in his way as possible.
We got another caller here. 310 is joining us here on the Celtics postgame show. Who we have?
Hey, I'm Jerry, fellas. What's up?
Jerry.
What's up, Jerry?
Good to hear from you again.
Hey, man, I had to suck it up and call on a losing night and still represent the Celtics, you know, because I did watch the game. LeBron played great. You know, you always have to say that. You know, he's their best player and everything, but you know, like you guys were saying, I want to repeat it because it makes a lot of sense. The offensive rebounding mistakes that they did, not covering Nance, not bringing in Baines,
Those three plays defined the game to me. Those easy tip-ins he got as they were making their run in the fourth.
Yep, missing 9 free throws, which even if you say let's make half of them, you know, you're still behind. You still needed a few more buckets. And then the consistent players, Terry Rozier and Brown start off red hot. But Al Horford didn't show anything. He looked like he was hobbled out there sometimes. And, you know, he was playing like that fatigue LeBron deal. You know, they're old guys, but no excuses. And then you got Tatum making turnovers, not being decisive. And the team didn't look connected. Like Brad Stevens says in his press conference, it says the more connected team wins. And you got Jeff Green coming out of nowhere. You got, you know, Nance. So, hey, you got to give him respect. I don't know. I really – there's no explanation in my mind how this tough team that won so many road games all season – I watched many other games, you know, I say 70, 80% of the games, and they win them on the road. This is playoffs. They're playing, you know, a great player that kind of – Band-aids all the other flaws of the Cavs. He kind of, you know, just does a little bit of everything to make up for everything. And those two step-back threes were the daggers. He closed it out real good. You got to give it to him. Tip your hat. And you know what? You got to steal game 7 now. And the guys got to, you know, steal themselves and see how badly do they want to be in the NBA Finals. See how badly they want to vanquish LeBron James, the king of the NBA. And if they do, they're going to step up and they're going to leave everything there. And that crowd is going to be going. And this is the time. I mean, you got a great chance Saturday. I'm excited to watch that game, and I enjoyed this game. What else can I say?
Matt,
nothing.
You
hit it all.
Some great points. You bring up 2 points in particular I want to hit on. Jaylen Brown in this one. Unstoppable in the first quarter, backing guys down, going to the rim at will, setting the tone for this one, really. He had 15 in that quarter, 12 for the rest of the night. It felt like he was slower from there on out, getting blitzed a little bit, I saw. But they're in a tough spot with Brown right now, Matt. And this is going to change over time, I think, because I think he's going to become a better dribbler, a better facilitator, and be able to get points on his own. But he's not there yet, and when they can't get the ball to him, he gets taken out of the game, I feel like. That seems to be what slowed him down tonight after that first. What did you see?
Well, he does a lot better in their motion offense, where they're moving the ball side to side, where they're running a lot of off-ball motion. They can get him spotting up in the corner, where he can attack closeouts. I think he does worse when, you know, you isolate him and you say, like, oh, I need you. I want to get you in a matchup with call it George Hill. So they get a screen with Jaylen Brown and George Hill or Kyle Korver, and then he gets a post catch, and then he's got to decide from there. Like, I like him better when he gets the defense more off balanced. I thought he did a better job in the second half of really attacking in transition, because he knew that they were really barricading down on him, especially when he got it in the post. They were trying to get him to pass out. So he did a good job, you know, getting defensive rebounds, getting the outlet pass, taking it coast to coast, and making like guys like Kyle Korver fall back on their feet and retreat, because he was just, you know, burning those guys to the basket even in the fourth quarter to help the Celtics stay in it. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, he, for all the strides he's made offensively, he's not the polished offensive player that you need as a go-to scorer in Eastern Conference Finals Game 6. Like, and that's 100% fine, 100% fine. And, like, you know, looking big picture at this team, if they lose Game 7, like, the growth that you've had with this group is tremendous. Everything in here is – there's nothing to really hang your head off of if it doesn't go your way in Game 7. And I just think the growth of Jaylen Brown, like, you see his shortcomings sometimes when, you know, he can't score in isolation when all five guys are really hounding down on him and putting all their attention on him. But his growth has been remarkable in the all season and then even into the playoffs.
And, Jerry, you're talking about the road record. 28-13 in the regular season the road. One of the, I think it was the best in the Eastern Conference, actually, their road record. I look back at their record after Kyrie went down. Not as great, 5-4, but still, wins coming on the road. They had an undefeated road trip toward the end of the season on the road. So it is stunning to see it take the turn it has. And that's, it's an answer we're all still searching for. If they lose on Sunday, that's going to be a 1-7 postseason on the road, which is tough to swallow. If you're looking for the growth strides from this team, you do want to see them pull one of these out. And I think through the middle course of this game, I was saying, call timeout, use all the timeouts before the end of the game, because it felt like this one was heading in a blowout direction. But I think Stevens is looking at this postseason as much as anyone else is and saying, these guys have to figure it out. We're probably going to lose these road games, but I can't bail them out of it. They're going to have to do it. And to his credit, to their credit, they almost did it tonight. But at the end of the day, almost isn't going to cut in the result of this series.
Yeah, I just want to comment on what you said, you know, that Brad seems like he is letting them make the mistakes and learning from them. You know, the one thing I would say about Morris, him being kind of an emotional player that does feed off the crowd, he doesn't do well. He doesn't do well on the road. And another thing about Jaylen Brown, you see how the guy works on his game in the summertime, and, you know, he speaks on it. But I could see him coming back more consistent on the free throws. I could also see him coming back next season with a sweeter jumper that's a little bit more wet, so he can keep those guys off him a little bit. Because his moves to the hole against three or four guys on the fast break, I mean, he looks like almost unstoppable. He just, his touch is not perfect, you know, under the basket, kind of like, you know, the veterans like LeBron and Kobe were. But, you know, he's exciting to watch. He's fun to watch.
Go ahead, Jerry. I'll let you finish up before I go.
Yeah, I just appreciate it. I just kind of want to give my thoughts on, you know, how lucky are the Warriors? What sorcery are these guys doing?
Man,
like their first breakout year, Kevin Love doesn't even play in the finals. Kyrie breaks his kneecap game one. They lose by 6. You know, you figure with those two guys, the Cavs could overcome. And then, you know, Kawhi gets hurt. Boogie Cousins ain't there. I think Drew Holiday. And now Chris Paul hurts his hamstring. The Warriors were on the ropes. I mean, this is a kind of a fortunate thing for them. But that game's going to be great tomorrow.
And Kawhi got hurt twice. Kawhi got hurt twice last year and this year for the playoffs.
Hey, I will say
so they lucked out twice with Kawhi.
I will say this, though. Andrew Bogut doesn't break his leg in the 16 finals. I think they win that series, too. So it has gone against them as well. And the Draymond Green suspension, of course, everything that went wrong for them in that one. Jerry, good to hear from you, as always. I will say this to you, Matt. Thanks a lot, Jerry.
All right, folks.
I will say this. Here's something that should make people feel better about this postseason run, win or lose in this series. Yeah, you lost every road game in this series, but on a night like tonight, who lost you the game? You know, Marcus Morris wasn't on his game. Marcus Smart wasn't on his game for most of the night. The guys who held you in it and gave them hope till the final moments, Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Not their best games, but they figure it out. They get enough points. They keep you in it until the final moments. I really thought this game was going to go in a brawl direction as things were starting to pile up against them. And the way they played offensively in the fourth was sensational. They were pretty much trading buckets with the Cavs all the way until the final buzzer. They just needed a bit more defense. And that's where you look at a guy like Horford, Smart, Morris especially, because that's what you're banking on from him, is him being that LeBron stopper. But it cuts both ways. You know, this has been an invaluable experience for all of these guys, but you want to see a team take advantage of the moment, because you never know when that moment's going to come again, even as good as next year looks.
Great point. I mean, look, what you can take away from this game tonight is that this isn't the same Celtics team that you've seen on the road over the last 6 weeks or so. They played well, all things considered, tonight. I mean, they didn't play well enough, but this was not the same flat, you know, completely disoriented, you know, their throw out their scheme, you know, Jekyll and Hyde type performance that we've gotten accustomed to. Yeah, they were really resilient tonight, and they got outdueled by, you know, a great player in LeBron James. But I think, you know, you got a lot more utility out of your young guys. I think that's a great point by you, but from Rozier and Tatum and Brown, and it was the veterans, frankly, who are the ones who let you down tonight on the road. one thing that Jerry talked about is it was Jaylen Brown's ability to kind of carve and weave in transition and get his way to the basket and how dynamic he is. I think both he and Tatum, once they get in the weight room, they're able to finish through contact. Like, Jason Tatum's length, Jaylen Brown's athleticism are like rare, off the charts, unique skill sets for an offensive production standpoint. And I think when those guys can learn how to use their bodies to finish through contact, use those skills to really body up with players and get more and ones at the rim and increase their shooting percentage at the basket, like, they're going to be unstoppable players. I mean, maybe not unstoppable for Jaylen Brown, but certainly for Jason Tatum. That's the way I feel. And then the second thing that I wanted to talk about that Jerry did bring up briefly was the offensive rebounding. One thing that I've noticed, not only in this series, but, you know, across the playoffs overall, is that, okay, it started out with, you know, using switches to get isolations on the players that you want defensively. And then the Celtics and the Warriors have been countering that by doing the scramble where they get Terry Rozier and Steph Curry out of there and kick them on to a big man where LeBron has to go against Aaron Baines or Al Horford. The problem
that
with
worked
that is
really well in the
right.
game early too.
But the problem with that is the next integration of it is that all of a sudden Terry Rozier is caught on Tristan Thompson or Larry Nance, and anything that comes off the rim, if Rozier isn't boxing out, you know, beyond imagination, you know, they're going to get easy tip-ins because you're just so switchable at that point that you have to be exploitable somewhere. And I think that's what's happening a little bit with Nance and Thompson. And that's a trade-off, right? Like, you want good matchups on LeBron first and foremost. So, like, it's almost like a pick your poison at that point. But those are, like, the iterations that have been growing off of, like, how this series has been going and the Western Conference series as well.
How do you expect Game 7 to play out? It's been tonight wasn't a blowout, but it never really felt like the Celtics were in it, so it's essentially the same thing. Do you think we're finally going to get a close one in Boston Sunday?
I think we're going to get a close one. I really do. I think you're going to get LeBron's best shot. I think he's going to have a huge game. I think he's motivated whether he wins or loses to really show out for the Cleveland crowd so that if he decides to leave – they can say that he gave it his best in his final year and all that. But I think you're not going to see this Celtics team fold under the pressure either. They've shown it time and time again throughout the season, how resilient they are. They are not going to let the game get away from them. Even if they get down by 17, 19 points at some point, that is not enough of a lead against this team. We've seen it throughout the season. They're too resilient. I think this one goes down to the wire, and it comes down to if the Celtics as a team can execute at the end of games like they did in Philadelphia versus LeBron's execution in the final 5 minutes.
That is scary. That is a scary thought going into Game 7. The fact that it's going to be Brad Stevens' greatness in the final few minutes if it's a close game against what LeBron James has done in these final moments of games through his postseason career. He is elite in those moments. We've seen buzzer beaters this postseason. We saw two against Toronto that ripped their heart out in that series. Yeah. And he really hasn't had a chance to do it against Boston yet in this series. So if that happens at the Garden on Sunday, it's going to be a long Monday. We know how Mondays are. It's going to be even worse if LeBron does that to them on Monday. I do wonder if Stevens can counter it, though.
I do. The terrifying thing is I'm not sure Brad Stevens can really do anything to stop LeBron James. Like, there comes a point when your coach is just, there's just nothing you can do. And I mean, like he continues to say, you make it difficult on him, you know, you don't let things come easy. And that's cliche in many ways, but like, look, LeBron, he says it himself, he's seen everything and I believe it. And there's no way to develop some secretive game plan to really lock him down and shut him down and get him out of his groove. He has an answer for every adjustment. So it's whether the Celtics can perform, you know, in the small areas, the intangible areas that will really count on Sunday night.
I'm looking at Kyle Korver going into this game because he's someone I look at and say he could be right there with LeBron scoring for them in Game 7. And here's the thing. If LeBron scores 50, 60, we know this. He's going to need someone else to step up too. If Kevin Love doesn't play, as we talked about a few minutes ago. That's 15, 20 points missing on top of that, too. And, you know, Cleveland has had their moments defensively in this series, but if we think about it, they've been held to 83 times. The Celtics have scored 100 points every game, no matter what. That's pretty much the default against Cleveland's defense. They're not going to be able to step up enough to keep the Celtics below 100. Even on their worst shooting night, they shot 36% in game five, and they win scoring 100 points nonetheless. So when we look at the supporting cast there, Jeff Green just got going for the first time this series. George Hill had his best game of the series tonight. But those guys have been nothing in Boston. What are you expecting out of the supporting cast on Sunday for Cleveland?
I think you'll get at least one of them. I mean, I think just by the law of averages, you're going to get one of them who has probably close to points, 15 to 20. Maybe less than that, maybe, you know, 13 to 18, ideally, if you're the Celtics. Like, there has to be that guy. What, maybe it's Kevin Love if he plays. Maybe not. If I'm Ty Lue, I keep a short leash with J.R. Smith. He's got some ghosts in Boston TD Garden. And, look, if he misses his first couple shots, I go to Kyle Korver the rest of the game, and I lean on Kyle Korver and just say, you know, just launch it. Put it up there. I think you need George Hill because he's really the only other ball handler that you have other than LeBron. He's the only other guy who can change tempo and orchestrate the offense. So even if he's cold, I would lean on him. If you need a spark off the bench, you choose between Green and Jordan Clarkson. Both of those guys are just so streaky. I guess you go with Jeff Green. Well, Ronnie Hood didn't even get in tonight. Yeah, I mean, he's in the doghouse, and that's so sad because he's ridiculously talented, way more talented than anyone else they have at shooting guard. But he just doesn't have his head on straight.
Their biggest issue still is that trade deadline went against them, and Hill showed up tonight, but he hasn't been great in the series. And you have two of those four guys they picked up on the deadline stuck on the bench. And Nance has been in and out of the lineup, too, throughout this series.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you give Dwayne Wade seven games, he's going to have at least one spectacular
game.
That's
what I was just going to bring up. No one has talked about that this series, but they gave away Dwayne Wade
for nothing. Yeah,
and
just as a courtesy.
We look at the way J.R. Smith has played in the series. You know, Kyle Korver has his moments, but he scored 6 points tonight. Like, he'll at his age, he's going to be up and down. Wade gives you something in this series.
Yeah, definitely. And if anything, he can create his own shot.
That was.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it was just, I think Kobe Altman did the right thing to unload, but I don't think he had to. I mean, unless Dwayne Wade was, like, really wanted out. And
that
like,
seems
he's
like
get me back to
no
Miami, please. Like,
yeah.
And LeBron was like, look, this is my guy. Like, get him to Miami. And Pat Riley was like, okay, well, we're not going to give you anything.
That just creeps into my head. And it's not even after this game. Just this afternoon I was thinking, jeez, the way their role players have played, if Wade's in this series, I'm a little more fearful of that cast of characters there. Yeah. Wade, Love, and LeBron, I know Wade's at an advanced age. Maybe this was his last season in the NBA, but it's still Dwayne Wade, and we know what he's done to the Celtics in the past, too. So, Game 7, going to be interesting. I'm a little fearful, but I do think there's some things you can hang your head on, including the play of Marcus Smart this postseason at home. Game 5, we look back at that versus tonight. He's had flawless games in this series, and I even wrote a little something on the site early in the series that
I saw it.
He's been the key to their overwhelming success against Cleveland at home. Now, they probably still beat Cleveland without him in these home games, but he is just taking it to the next level where they're blowing them out by stealing possessions away from them, completely limiting the turnovers, and making outstanding passes on those rolls to the rim. And that's something I think you were missing from him in these games, too, on the road. You don't see a lot of those drives to the rim where he's creating for them in these situations. He's another guy who is just severely beaten down, it seems like, by the pressure and the pressing deficits they faced in these games. You see him just trying to do a little too much, and it turns into turnovers, bad plays. It's been the complete opposite in Boston, and I think he's my X factor on Sunday this game gets down to the wire, close as we both think it will, both will be, a couple Marcus Smart plays happen, and I think this game swings in your factor. In your favor, rather.
Look, who else would you want in the final 5 minutes on your squad than that guy at home? If you're at home, of course. Who else would you want to make that big play to get to that 50-50 ball, to be the first to the floor, to either, you know, make a save ball out of bounds or you know, a 50-50 ball that someone else could
he
get to?
Needs,
like that?
You know, of all the Marcus Smart plays we've seen over the years, none of them have happened in like, that I can remember in crunch time or like a big playoff game. He's due to have like a Marcus Smart moment, like a career defining moment in one of these situations.
Well, in his defense, he hasn't played a ton in clutch time, at least on offense, in the playoffs until this year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know like how much, obviously you're doing like the offense defense sub with Isaiah last year. So that keeps him out for half the plays, but before I forget about this, his block on LeBron that ended up in a Larry Nance putback dunk was absolutely incredible. And I don't know. Hopefully we'll have to find a clip of it somewhere, but it was an incredible athletic block. Like I've never seen someone his size do that to LeBron ever. Ever. It was unbelievable.
And it just made the putback so much more devastating.
I know.
That's out the window. And then all three of those seem to come off really hard, tough stops in the final moments. And I'm looking at Stevens greeting Kevin Love in the locker room right now. I'm very excited to see what that process is going to be like over the next 2 days. That hurts. This series has been a little bit weird with these layoffs, too. There was like a 3-4 day layoff earlier in the series, right? And then we've just gone game off day. Even in Cleveland's best efforts to force Love back in there and his best efforts, I'm sure he's going to want to play in that game. It's going to be tough on a 1 day turnaround, I think. With the travel too, it's going to be a tough case for them to build if this is a severe. Or even just a mild concussion to get him in the game Sunday night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's the tough thing with concussions is you never know how severe they are based on the replay. Like this and in football, like, you know, some concussions that keep you out for months, some you're good by the next day. Some, you check yourself right back into the game right after. So I don't know. Those things are such a hard thing to predict. So I guess we're just going to have to come out or tomorrow and see if something comes out with Kevin Love. I was surprised that Chris Paul was ruled out so early from game six, you know, more than 24 hours before tip off of that game. I wonder if the Cavs would do the same kind of courtesy for the Celtics to help them enhance their game plan.
Yeah. And in Paul's case, I think they just know right now, especially with a hamstring.
Right. But why did they announce it? They could have been like, we're still doing tests. He's gonna see how it feels the morning of.
That is a good question. Yeah, I'm not sure what that's all about. Maybe they're throwing him on the shelf. And, the announcement is weird because you understand the decision. But giving the Warriors that heads up that far ahead of time is interesting. That I really don't have an answer to that one.
I mean, unless you're, like, trying to build pressure on the Warriors, like I just don't understand what the upside of that is.
Maybe they're just being brutally honest.
Yeah, like maybe it's like the same sort of thing like with Mike Tomlin and his injury reports after every game when he's like, Ben has a thumb injury and he will be reevaluated tomorrow and it might be torn, and then he just down like the entire list. I'm getting off track, but that's what Mike Tomlin does. If you ever pay attention, he's so candid about injuries, like he's like the antithesis of Bill Belichick.
Yeah, maybe that's how Mike D'Antoni and that brass over there feels. He seems very Mike Tomlin-esque in his approach.
Daryl Morey is very, very outspoken. So
yeah, let's see if Isaiah's still hanging around. I see him on the line here. Isaiah, you back now? 860.
Hey, what's up,
look. Oh, there he is. I was going to say.
Hey, thanks for hanging on, Isaiah.
Yeah.
It's not Isaiah.
No. Who's this here?
No, this is Scotsman here.
Oh, Munger, good to hear from you. Right. I think you have the same area code as Isaiah, so I butchered that one.
New Jersey.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah. So listen, I've actually calmed down quite a bit after the game.
yeah.
We should have had you on earlier.
Listen, first off, Mark Jackson might be the single most insufferable douchebag.
That was really dumb what he said.
I know.
Tonight.
Like, I think it's some ESPN producers like, yo, we got to say this for LeBron.
Like, I mean,
you just got to say it.
I always thought Van Gundy at least was like kind of tolerable at times, because every now and then he'll do his job and call out officials or call out stupidity or call something a flop. And at least he'll be like moderately, you know, kind of like, you know, 60-40 down the middle. But Jackson and Green, I mean, these guys are absolutely pitiful as an announcer, and it actually hurts to watch games that they do, because it just makes you appreciate, you know, what we have in Boston with Mike Gorman and Tommy Heinsohn. You know, even Scal, people think Scal. I would say, I like Scal.
I'll one up you on this one, Munger. I was listening to the first quarter in the car. I was coming back from the gym to start this game. Sean Grandy is so good. We take for granted how great of a play-by-play guy that is. And I know playoff time, you're going to be by the TV, but I think
play-by-play
a solution
basketball
for you.
Radio is so hard.
I think a solution for you: mute the TV, put Grandy on, try to match it up somehow. Maybe you watch a little bit behind it, whatever you have to do. But Grandy is just on the mark about everything in this. He's got the stats, the storylines. His interviews with Stevens before the game are so great. I always try to watch a little, or at least listen to a little bit of the game through Sean Grandy's perspective, because he is the best, and we still have him as far as this team goes.
Yeah, I mean, between that and, like, after the – we were, actually, you know, doing real well in the first quarter. And the way that the game was officiated changed, because you look at from the second quarter on, you know, the way that the officials decided to call the game, completely flip-flop. The first five fouls in the second quarter were on us. The free throws from, like, the first quarter on, it was, you know, heavily in favor of the Cavs. You know, they get a few – Cavs had, I think it was like a 15-point lead. They got a couple quick calls in there to make the numbers look right. But this is what the most, I don't say impressive just because it was still infuriating. Richard Sherman, you know, NFL defensive back, he was on Twitter talking trash. He's like, listen, why doesn't the NBA just send it straight to game 7? He's like, when you see one side officiating like this, what is the point? You're not fooling anybody. And he's not the first athlete. I think Jeff Schwartz, former NFL lineman, you know, he calls out the officiating. All these guys are out there calling out LeBron. I mean, listen, I think it's amazing that not only did he manage to find the energy after near-death experience of what he went through in Game 5 to play tonight, but, I mean, you know, like, honestly, how his leg isn't amputated right now, that just baffles me. I just don't get it. I mean, I think they have to play Game 7 on one leg, and then what happens is you're gonna see Nick Wright try to attach himself to LeBron, you know, LeBron's thigh, and offer to be his leg. You know, that's how sad and pathetic that clown is. But
I will say though, he gets people with it. The whole media world was
awful.
Pulled in by the fatigue that he was going through in Game 5. And after that fatigue, we're like, does he have anything left? Is this it? Is he out of gas for the series? And he comes out and plays 46 minutes tonight. It's all the actress.
Didn't get hurt. Sorry.
And
his leg almost fell off. So
yeah, we should know it by now, but he still gets you with it. And it just shows you how good he is at all of this. And I'm sure it seeps into the players on the opposite side a little bit too, this show that he puts on. And yeah, he was getting some good calls his way tonight too. I think outside of a few tough calls on him going to the rim, the officiating didn't strike me as that big of part of the outcome of this game. I think the Celtics were just so off as this game went on. But yeah, early in the series, I don't think they were that great. And, you know, the JR stuff pissed me off, too, the way they handled that. But Tonight in particular, I don't think the refs were too big of a part of it, but you're on the mark about the LeBron stuff. It's out of control.
It is. I mean, and, like, he's creating his own narrative, and, like, look, he's going to go back and go sleep in his hyperbolic chamber or whatever he's got, and he's going to recover and stuff. And, like, I haven't been able to go on NBA Reddit yet because, obviously, we went right to the post-game show, but I'm really hoping someone catches that what Van Gundy said, that LeBron was icing the wrong part of his leg. Like, he fell on one side and he was icing the other side. Like, I hope someone on Reddit caught that, and I hope it goes viral. Like, that, I will take some solace if I can find that later tonight. I didn't have a big issue with the referees overall. I mean, obviously there is a big disparity in the free throws, and I won't blame Celtics fans if they take issue with it, because, you know, the Celtics were aggressive. It's not like they sat there and launched a bunch of threes tonight. They took only 28. You know, they scored a lot in the paint. They wanted to get into the paint. You would think that they'd be able to go to the free throw line a little bit more. But I didn't think there was anything glaring, any huge missed calls in general. But I think in totality, you know, there is a disparity there that you could maybe take some issue with. But overall, I thought the Celtics had plenty of chances to win this game. You close up one or two small things, and I don't think there is a game seven on Sunday night. And that's the disappointing part.
Munger, yeah, how are you feeling going into seven?
I think if we made made the free throws that we did get, and just done a little bit better rebounding the ball, that could help. But I mean, on that play where LeBron, you know, his life was in danger with his leg, when you watch the replay, Tatum went to the basket, got absolutely mauled, and they refused to.
That one was bad.
That was actually at a critical moment in the game, because we were kind of rolling right now. Momentum was in our favor, and instead of putting a decent free throw shooter at the line, I think if we made both, it could have gotten it down to five at that moment in the game. I could be wrong about the numbers, but it was close. Between that, there was one that, they called earlier where he knocked the ball out of LeBron's hand, and instead of just calling out of bounds, they called a foul. It's like, come on, you know, just like little garbage like that. People don't like to admit it, but the little fouls that aren't, when people say in the act of shooting add up, and then you allow a team to get to the free throw line. Cause as everybody knows, if you see the ball go through the basket, it becomes a lot easier and the rim becomes a lot wider, but guys, great show tonight. Have a good time. I still hate David Stern. I hate all NBA refs. And let's just hope that the NBA just doesn't intentionally do what they always do and stick it to us and give us Scott Foster and Tony Brothers in Game 7. But
well, you already got Foster once, so I don't. Can you get him again? Maybe you'll get Brothers. But yeah, I'll say this. I mean, I don't believe that the refs are controlling the game, or there's a huge conspiracy theory. But if there was the NBA orchestrating that they wanted a game seven, I'll tell you what, you could call anything off ball. Like, these guys are fighting for post position. They're fighting to get a good spot to catch. Like, you could call anything defensively when they're holding
game.
Each other down. Yeah, like there, you could you any, anything is a defensive foul.
We saw Roger on one play go flying into LeBron. 180-pound Roger sends LeBron flying, so that's one thing. But there was a lot of off-ball contact in this game.
Yeah.
A lot of bodies.
You can call that any time.
Each other at the rim. Yeah, and even that Tatum-Love collision was pretty violent tonight. So it was a very physical game. I do have the latest on Love. He left the stadium, said he's going to have more tests done, and he called it a toss-up whether he plays Sunday or not. I do wonder, do you know off the top of your head if he has concussion history? I believe he does.
I did look it up. He had one earlier this year, and he had one in 2016. But I will Google that to see if I can see how long it took him to get out of it.
So, yeah,
I'm sure that'll come to light soon.
We know that each consecutive concussion is going to be a tougher thing to recover from, because they just seem to get worse, you know, each one you have. Love has been so banged up throughout his career, not just those, but other ailments as well. He has not had a fortunate career when it's come to injuries, even going back to Minnesota. So I hear him say it's a toss-up for Sunday, and that makes me, you seem to think they're going to push him through, he's going to get out there Sunday.
I just don't know if you can work your magic behind the scenes, like if it's the Cavs physician who's like, yeah, you look fine, wink, wink.
Yeah. I do wonder, though, if he's not feeling good about this, he's calling it a toss-up, if he's not gung-ho about this, he's not playing. You know, that's my – you need both sides kind of saying, let's do this. But we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, there's no real way of telling now. Let's wrap this show up. It's good to talk to you as always. Glad to hear from you on the show here, Matt. It's been a good one.
Yeah,
not the callers, not the caller output that you would have seen if it was a win going into the finals, but good to hear from Munger and Jerry as well, who's been with us throughout the series.
But yeah, if Isaiah's out there, come in. You could have 20 seconds to say what you want.
No, we that was not Isaiah. That was Munger's number. I butchered that one.
Okay.
That's why we need.
Well, if Isaiah's out there,
a call screener.
I know he's.
But
down,
yeah, I'm sure he's listening somewhere. All right, so game seven, I picked Cleveland at seven from the start on this one. I'm sticking with it. I hate to do it, but missed opportunities. I think that throws karma against you. The Celtics have had 2-0, 3-2 leads in the series. You squander that without getting the road win. And I think this 10-0 home thing is going to go against you at some point. I cannot imagine them going 11-0 at home. If they do, more power to them. They took advantage of that to the fullest. I think we'll go into next season saying the regular season is probably more important than everyone gives them credit for. And that's something that the Celtics have highlighted throughout their Stevens tenure. But I'm with you. I think it's a close game. I think it goes down to the wire. Marcus Smart's going to have some big plays in this one. Cleveland isn't going to get quite the supporting effort that they have at home. But if it's a close game going into the final moments, I think LeBron gets it done. And I'm still hanging with Cavs in seven.
Well, I might be a little biased here, but you know, there's a narrative lately in the NBA, and you know, you look at it from a 35,000-foot view, and people say, well, it's a superstar-driven league. You need top five players, maybe multiple top five players, to really make a run at a championship. And if you can't get those, then it's not worth it. Well, I want to say for all the small market teams out there, for all the rebuilding teams, if the Celtics can pull this off in Game 7, that means you have to change the complete stereotype of the NBA saying that it's impossible to get to the finals without a bona fide superstar that you can give the ball to with the shot clock winding down, and he can just take over the game for you. So I'm going to roll with the Celtics because I think destiny's on their side. I think they're the better team, top to bottom. I think they play more connected, like Brad is saying. I think their system is better. I think they have less weaknesses overall. They have better two-way players. And I just look at the Cavs supporting cast, and outside of Larry Nance and sometimes Tristan Thompson, I don't see anyone who plays with a lot of heart. I don't see anyone who plays with a lot of drive. I think a lot of these guys deep down couldn't care less whether this is a Eastern Conference Finals or whether it's a regular season game.
You do see that demeanor.
Deep down, I think that. I think they think, what am I really playing for? And if the entire storyline is going to be about number 23, then intrinsically, what does that say? What does that do to their psyche in their head? Like, are they that motivated to put their body on the line when they know that they're not going to really get any credit? They've been getting hated on throughout the entire playoffs. People saying that they're nothing, that they're nobodies. And even if they make it to the finals and play well, they're going to give all the credit to LeBron. So I just think destiny is on the Celtics side. It'll create a nice storyline for LeBron to take his talents somewhere to the Western Conference, hopefully Sacramento. Actually, not Sacramento because we have their draft pick. Phoenix. Phoenix. Yeah, let's go Phoenix.
Yeah, and that will pull Phoenix out of running.
And I'm going to predict that the Celtics win in Game 7, but I don't feel particularly great about it.
Celtics are 23-8 all time in Game 7s, 20-4 at home. It's a blessing that they have home court in this series as we see the way it's gone. And they carry a 10-0 record into this game as well, as you've heard by now, I'm sure. That's our show for tonight. I'm Bobby Manning. That's Matt Chin. Check us out over at Celtics Blog. Going into tomorrow and the day after as we get ready for Game 7 on Sunday night, 8:30 at TD Garden. The winner goes on to the NBA Finals. Real quick, is Houston going to hang on out west, or is this Paul thing death for them?
I don't think they win Game 6. If Paul can play in Game 7, I give them a fighting shot because I really think the Warriors look out of sorts. They can't balance their isolation with their motion offense at all. So I would give them a shot if Paul can come back healthy. That's a cop out, but I do think Golden State wins.
I really want to see Houston Boston.
Oh, I love it.
They match up
so well.
It's just a change of scenery. Yes, especially if Paul is hobbled. That door opens. So let's get this done first. Sunday at 8:30, Celtics going to get it done. Keep the home cooking alive, and we will see you after that one. I think one way or another we'll be going 2 hours on postgame after that show, whether the Celtics are going to the NBA Finals or we're looking at the offseason, big final show in that case. But either way, join us there Sunday night time, 11 to 12:30, 1 a.m. Eastern. We'll see you then. Thanks for joining me, Matt. And we'll talk to you on Sunday.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSradio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.